Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journey, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of direct-to-consumer and e-commerce strategy at Quad. I'm so excited about today's guest, my friend and our first two-time guest, John Puterbaugh, VP of Advanced Media and Innovation at Quad. John specializes in emerging media and new technology at Quad. He's a strategist and technologist with an in-depth experience in integrated multi-channel marketing. John co-founded one of the first mobile agencies, Nelly Moser, in late 2000, pioneering early mobile apps and services for MTV, brands like South Park, The Daily Show, The Colbert Report, Sony Music, Warner Music, Virgin Mobile, and Amazon's Audible service. John works with Quad clients on multi-channel marketing, media channel optimization, and connecting offline and online marketing. He's a frequent speaker at industry events. He's my friend and fellow musician. John, welcome to the show.
Fantastic to be back. I'm very excited and privileged to be a second time participant. You set the bar high.
Well, John, I'll tell you, dude, I had so much fun with our predictions last year. For our audience, we're recording in December of 2024, but we'll be releasing this in early January. And John and I thought we'd get together and talk about some of the things that are happening in the marketing space and how we think they will be impacting brands in 2025. So, John, anything you want to say, first of all, to set us down the road?
No, I mean, let's have at it. I mean, there's certainly a lot moving on, and it's exciting because I think with big tech and data and AI all coming together, things are getting mashed up and orchestrated in all new ways. So it's a lot of change, and it's exciting.
Well, I do want to talk about AI, but I intentionally am not leading with that question because everybody's talking about it right now. But there are a lot of things that are happening in the marketing space, and I thought I'll riff some questions at you, and we'll take it from there. The first one I was thinking about is we've kind of had that on again, off again, cookie deprecation conversation going on for a couple of years. What do you see the role of cookies in paid media in 2025?
Well, it's a great question. And certainly, as many of us know, this past year, basically Google reversed its decision to deprecate cookies. And, you know, some of you may say, well, what's the big deal? Why are we talking about cookies? Well, basically, when you get rid of third-party cookies, it impacts the ability to advertise on web browsers. And I'll just do a little, if you don't mind me diving into the details a second on the browser technology. But, you know, web browsers are basically stateless. They don't have a memory. They have no real persistent memory. So I think of third-party cookies as little post-it notes that allow kind of advertisers to remember us. But the reason it's important is, you know, there's over 3.5 billion people globally using Chrome. And, you know, in the US, Chrome has like a 50% market share, right? Apple's around 30%, I think. So, anyways, the big deal is, you know, even as recent as 2020, you know, at least according to Forbes, 80% of advertisers relied on third-party cookies for not only just targeting, but measurement. So then, you know, this whole thing, like you said, I think going into 2025, for each business, we just need to understand, you know, how does this impact our business? So we're still spending, you know, you and I, you know, spend a lot of time with traditional media as well. We still spend about a third of our time on that. But a lot of the time now is spent with mobile and digital devices like connected TV. So how does the cookies play a role into that? And so I think the good news is on the ad tech side, a majority of the tech companies have already built in ad solutions that really don't rely on cookies. I think it's called, you know, cookie-less advertising, if you will. And at the same time, I think we've also seen kind of a return to in contextual marketing. Some people refer to this as kind of content as the new cookie. And so I think the only thing we really need to watch this coming year is understand where we advertise, right, on the publishers to make sure how are they assigning identifiers in place of these cookies when we actually request ads to be placed. Because, you know, the brands want to know they're putting the ad in front of the right person. And without cookies, you need to have some form of identifiers. And that space is kind of a messy, evolving space. And I think we'll learn a lot more in 2025 on this.
You used a phrase that you've liked to use, and I've heard you use before, content is the new cookie. Say more about how you see that evolving for a brand in 25.
Well, if you're an advertiser and you can't use cookies, which again, those little bookmarks to say, oh, this is Marcus coming back to the site, you have to find other ways to advertise with them. And if you don't have an identifier, you basically, your next best thing is to say, well, what kind of content are they reading? Can I target people based on content? And so it used to be you'd place ads, right? We pick up phones and place ads on specific, you know, in specific papers or on specific websites based on the brand, right? You know, whatever the publisher is. And then eventually, what contextual targeting was originally saying, specifying the domains. Do I want to advertise on Major League Baseball or do I want to advertise on a specific news or weather site? But now, just like we can do with search marketing, we can take phrases and keywords and make sure ads appear right alongside those very specific things. And so it's a way to do targeting when you don't have these little the cookies available.
You know, Google recently came out with the Shield My Email policy. How do you see that impacting brands? And what are effective brands going to do to combat that change?
Yeah, great question. You know, basically the Google kind of Shield My Email, it enables us to create email aliases, right? So when we go to a website and people ask for our email address, you know, per the name, it's a way to kind of shield our email addresses. And Apple's supported this for a long time as part of their privacy initiatives. Hardcore privacy people, though, you know, like take a step further and use like what are called private email relay addresses. So you have unique, you know, for each service you go to, there's a unique address set up and then everything's forwarded to your inbox. So if you follow Joshua Locock on LinkedIn, you'll see a lively discussion. And the fact that a lot of retailers won't actually let you purchase from their site if you use these kind of obfuscation techniques, such as a private email relay. So back to your question, you know, at Quad, we think identifiers such as email and even IP addresses will ultimately be less and less reliable due to these tech changes by Apple and Google and Microsoft, as well as the privacy legislations. So we think the home, you know, basically our physical address is one of the most resilient identifiers. And then, as you know, we really think it all starts from the home and marketing can, you know, go forward from there. And you can use that to identify and contextualize people and market to them on the different channels.
It's fascinating. And certainly seems to be a trend that's continuing.
And it's going to be a challenge, right? Because a lot of the D2C companies and retailers, especially on Shopify, tend to use these email addresses as their identifier. You know, it's you know, what we call kind of a spine for the database or identity stack. So given that we all have multiple email addresses, I don't think it's a sustainable way to uniquely track customers and prospects. So it's going to be a challenge going into the 2025 here.
All right, let's switch. There's a lot of continued evolution to the attention span for consumers. You know, I think we both actually spoke on a webinar about the Mountain study that said Gen Z loses attention span in 1.3 seconds. What does that mean to brands in 2025? And if you were a brand, what would you be doing to adjust?
Yeah. So, you know, even though we were just talking about with cookies, you know, that about 2/3 of our time with media, at least, has shifted to digital and online, we still, you know, we're spending our time offline and we're always in some physical location in the world, right? And so you could argue that 80% of the economy is still offline, right? So the team over at Flowcode has just made this case for a while. And I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, as you know, we're a strategic partner at Quad with Flowcode and have been with them kind of since the beginning. And Flowcode, for those of you that don't know, are basically a next-gen QR codes. But they also have a full kind of IRL marketing platform in real life. And so I think they've kind of really been putting forward a very compelling idea that I think will grow a lot in 2025. So basically IRL marketing is all marketing that starts or initiated for the real world, right? And it's anything from direct mail to out of home to billboards, events, transit, TV, all this stuff. And I think, you know, for marketers, while we love the idea that our interactions with electric screens is, you know, measurable clicks and stuff, it's certainly more fragmented and fleeting based in terms of information and the pace it's presented. So I think when it comes to attention, the physical world is a great way to initiate conversations, engagement, and it can start with packaging, in-store signage, catalogs, all that stuff. They change at a slower rate, much more persistent, and I think it's a great way to start a dialogue with someone using things like Flowcodes.
Let's say you were a CPG or an e-commerce brand. You know, how would you incorporate Flowcode into your strategy, maybe in some concrete ways moving into 25?
Yeah, it's a great question. The flow codes, again, just to reiterate, are basically they are QR codes, but they look better, they scan faster, they're privacy and brand compliant, and you can integrate them with the MarTech stack. So, you know, I think as part of a strategy, flow codes make it easy for marketers to turn interest into action, right? You have a strong call to action, the branded code is there, and they become a great measurement opportunity to capture top of funnel intent. And as you and I discussed on the webinar, you mentioned, you know, actions such as a QR scan, we think actions are a better way to build and understand audiences. And so when you use actions as opposed to things like attributes, right, demographics and psychographics, you can basically predict better what are people trying to do, right, their intent. And so when they visit a site or scan a code or download an app, it's easier to predict kind of basically your next best action of what they should be doing to have you kind of fully become part of your brand dialogue.
What do you mean by next best action? Why don't you elaborate on that for our audience?
Yeah, you bet. So a lot of times, right, in traditional advertising, you'd put a bunch of ads out there and they would all link to the same destination, your website, a video, some sign up form. And ultimately, different people are in different stages, right, of your life, customer journey life cycle with them, right?
Yeah.
Never interacted with the brand. Sometimes are first time purchasers. Sometimes people are lapsed. So basically, by using next best action, you can kind of say, well, what do I need to do from that person? And in some cases, it's much better to kind of capture their email address than it is to perhaps drive them right to a purchase. And this all goes back to, again, actions. I think what people do is more reliable than what they say, right? We've had Absolutely. A crazy election season, and polling is not reliable. And a lot of media planning is based on surveys, right? So I think, you know this. So we basically look at an action intent we think is more predictable and reliable, where we decide where to spend our money or, you know, respond to a next best action.
The story that the guys at Flowcode were sharing about the NBA is, you know, they put 15,000 people in the Knicks stadium every night. And most of those are season ticket holders. But those season ticket holders are either selling, repurposing, or giving those tickets to friends. And so they started putting flow codes inside the stadium so that they could engage with and gather the first party information of the people that were in attendance, even though they weren't the ticket holders, which enabled the Knicks to build a relationship far beyond their season ticket holders. And they did that simply by acquiring the first party information of the email address, which allows people to then engage with the brand in a different way and move them further along the funnel.
I mean, that same logic applies to all your CPG brands in a retail store, like Absolutely. A grocery or Walmart. So
you were talking about in real life, as it were, a little bit, and some more traditional media. Let's talk about catalog a little bit. I read of several stories this fall about catalog. Are you seeing them still continuing to make a comeback? Do you see that trend continuing?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to say here, right? The short answer is they never went away. The long answer is it depends on the business. So there are many types of businesses. So certainly there's a whole slew of businesses that got their start as catalogers, right? Catalogers were the original D2C companies, the direct marketers. And so the challenge is the ones that have low margin products, they've decreased their spend, right? So their catalog circulation has gone down as they endeavor to kind of diversify their business and become multi-channel. Whereas on the e-com side, they've simply added catalogs straight to their website. And so many of you and you, Marcus, you and I have talked about it, you know, gotten catalogs from Amazon and Wayfair. These e-com companies are sending out a lot of catalogs. And then the last one, I'd say D2C brands, they found out that like search and social kind of reached a point of diminishing return in their marketing mix. And they've expanded out to podcasts and catalogs. And they've learned that, you know, they build and acquire customers with catalogs. You get a better lifetime value and a better frequency of spend. So anyways, you know, the whole elephant in the room around catalogs has become around the USPS, right? And so businesses that have lower margins, catalogs have become more expensive to deliver, and it's made it tough for them. But still, for a number of our customers, print is still a really efficient vehicle for generating and reaching large audiences. So, you know, again, it comes back to, I think the last thing I'll say is, you know, measurement is so important on this. And many of the traditional catalogers did not evolve their measurement. And so they're still using some kind of combination of last touch attribution with their matchback. And so they don't give the catalog credits for driving both in-store and online traffic. Like some only attribute online sales to them. And some, you know, don't, you know, do certain things like, you know, pull out email because they since email was a newer channel, they take it off the top and then they measure the catalog. So lots of strange things have caused the traditional catalogers to decrease circulation and kind of rethink their businesses.
I wanna come back to that whole conversation around measurement in a second here, but to come full circle on catalog and flow code and other engagements, you know, some of the things that you know, Amazon and other marketers have done very effectively is integrating some kind of QR or flow code into their catalog piece to further drive engagement and probably assist in the measurement. And I just think that that trend will continue.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we helped a new brand that's been very successful online launch a catalog, and they put flow codes throughout of it, had close to 20 flow codes throughout the catalog, and there is no pricing in the catalog. And it's gotten a phenomenal engagement rate, and it's a great vehicle of connecting that, using the storytelling, the impactful kind of displays in the catalog to drive people online. And so, yeah, very bullish on tying together, right, these kind of offline and online tactics.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, let's talk measurement. You opened that can of worms a moment ago. How do you see measurement evolving? You know, what are some of the trends you're seeing? And do you think there's going to be a need for different or better measurement as over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think again, what I'm seeing, and there's a lot of things going on in measurement, but over the past kind of 2 or 3 years, everyone realized you just can't build a big business just using performance marketing. And everyone loved kind of, I guess what's also referred to as lower funnel marketing, right? Everyone loved kind of bottom funnel, either remarketing or certain types of very specific paid search and stuff to really convert customers right to purchase. And but again, you need brand. And I think this idea of full funnel measurement and measuring brand is really important. So I think in 2025, you'll just see brand measurement vehicles evolve a lot better, because you just can't look at like clicks and click-throughs and cost per action. So I really think we're going to see people move beyond things like net promoter scores. It's just not actionable enough. And you really need to take brands down, measure, you know, break the components out and be able to iterate and optimize marketing campaigns, both from all the lower funnel measurements we've discussed, but the top of funnel. And again, you know, we've hammered on this in multiple times on the last podcast, as well as on our webinar, but we're big proponents of incrementality. You have to see, as you add things out, is what I'm doing incremental to what I was doing before? And attribution is again, you know, instead of passing, you know, a bit of a fool's errand, in a sense that you'll never adequately attribute each little piece of how much percent did paid search, catalog, and so forth. And so, you know, people have used multi-touch attribution and things as part of the mix, but ultimately you need to look at the incrementality and get at it through things like media mix, or we have something called tactical media mix to really break down how these things are contributing to ultimate sales or performance or whatever you're measuring.
All right. So you're a brand that you're on Meta. You've got, you know, you're doing paid search. You might be on various marketplaces, call it, you know, Fulfillment by Amazon or whatever. And you're getting data. You're getting data from possibly your own internal tools, but you're also getting platform data from each of those as to how they're converting for you. Sometimes your internal tools are going to be contradictory to those platforms. What would you do to kind of level set? What's a concrete recommendation you would have for them to explore better measurement moving forward?
Yeah, it's a great question. So just to make a distinction, what we'll call like the walled gardens are basically things like a Meta, you know, Facebook and Instagram, Amazon, TikTok, Snapchat, so forth. But so all these walled gardens are one part of the world. And then there's the open internet. Some people, you know, talk about that being reachable through kind of what's called programmatic, right, advertising, where you're you know, it's open websites like, you know, news, weather, and sports and so forth. So when you're talking about kind of breaking out these measurements, it goes back to our, you know, identifiers and, you know, where to start. And we think it's a home, right? Someone's a person and their address. And if you build your audiences from that perspective, you then can set up the proper holdouts using known audiences. Now the trick comes, you know, walled gardens like Meta and Google don't play well in the sense that you can actually target specific people. You can upload your audiences, your lists to the walled gardens. They won't tell you though which ones that they've matched, if you will. So they'll take a portion of what you upload, the ones that they can identify, and they can identify a fair amount, and you can place ads to them. And so you have confidence that you're actually placing ads to them. And then unfortunately, to kind of close the loop, you have to then upload your performance data or your sales, and they'll tell you kind of what percentage of that audience that they were able to show ads to converted. So the only way to really control that, since they're not going to tell you who, is you have to do holdouts across geographies. And so you really have to kind of very carefully set up your tests and holdouts and audiences to really understand the incrementality and contribution of those walled gardens as part of your media mix. Otherwise, you're in a great situation with direct mail and programmatic direct. I can know who I'm showing, you know, CTV ads to, display ads to, and so you can actually do what, you know, direct marketers like to do and measure lift over control, get at incrementality, and deal with known audiences, right? You can match back. I know who purchased and I know who I reached out to. So that's what I would recommend, starting, you know, again, back to known audiences built in some structure, not using all the different DSPs to build third audiences from third-party cookies and so forth.
Okay. The elephant in the room is AI. Everybody's nervous about it, or many people, I should say, are still nervous about it. What do you see AI doing in the marketing world in 2025? You know, what are some things to look out for?
All right, great. So let's start on the individual level, right? Like all of us as individuals in our careers, we all need to become familiar with the suite of AI tools, right? And how they can empower us. And there's a bunch of them, right? ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, Gemini, Midjourney. And there's thousands of point solutions, right? Depending on whatever our area of expertise is. And so, you know, that's a no-brainer. And whether you use them or not, you still have to become aware of them because you have to see whether other people are using them on you as a job application, to run meetings, PowerPoints, and so forth. So it levels the playing field and all that. You know, in 2025, basically, other than the fact that all the services will get better faster, I think the main impact is coming around, you know, what I think of as the democratization of specialized tools and info. So in my opinion, like the killer app for AI is allowing us to access specialized software through kind of human, I don't know, accessible interfaces, you know, speech, text, and so forth. And so, you know, if I put my little techie hat on, I think of it as kind of cognitive ergonomics, right? You've got an electric guitar, right? You think about impedance matching when it comes to audio. We're basically taking us humans. We have low bandwidth, serialized communication, kind of slow, and we're interfacing with these massive, scalable, parallel processing machines. The cool thing is, though, we can simply now use language or text or images to get it to do stuff. Regression analysis, multi-chain report with graphics, things that drive performance. So basically, I think that's the killer app of AI, is to be able to access more complex things. You know, I think the last two things I'll say on it, and we can kind of drill down a bit, but, you know, as we learned from Facebook and a lot of the social networks were free because we were the product, right? Our attention was packaged and sold up to advertisers. But when it comes to AI, this, you know, it's a similar trajectory, except that it's our data, right? Our personal data and our company's data is what's at stake. And so we know that all our ad tech and marketing partners are going to use and integrate AI. So we're all going to benefit from that, but we're going to have to do better audits, better sanity checks, really make sure that the data is managed appropriately within company guidelines.
All right. So you're talking about a little bit about tools, about the personal nature of it, about the ability to apply it to things like, you know, theoretically marketing measurement. One of the things you didn't talk about is content. With all this AI generated content conversation, how does that impact the ability for marketers to make sure their media is being put in front of the right people?
Yeah. So I'm going to, you know, I think there's a long way to go on the gen AI, you know, gen content stuff. I think, you know, the AI system's very good for what I consider, you know, in our area, pre-media tasks, right? Removing backgrounds, resizing, you know, automating lots of image processing stuff. But the bigger challenge that's right on top of us is basically the more and more, you know, our customers and marketers are spending, the greater the risk and the decrease in efficiency is that spend, right? So we've already seen, like we talk about the walled gardens, Google, Meta, and Amazon have increasingly added in automation, machine learning, AI. But we know, and we've seen this firsthand with our customers. You have one, I've had a couple that are basically spending their marketing targeting on bots or bad agents like ClickFarms rather than real people. So I think even though, you know, the AI generated content is interesting, I think we still got to be very, got to really be on top of our spend. And you got to audit it. You got to look at the log files of the ad tech. You got to make sure all the fees we're paying. So people are more and more kind of starting to get lazy because you really don't want to touch Meta and Google. They'll do a better job than any, you know, buyer in terms of optimizing in real time. But we know that the inefficiencies are coming up, right? And invalid traffic and in terms of bots, but also a lot of the site stuff that's being driven by the platforms is non-incremental, right?
Yes.
You'll keep paying or bidding for attention that you already have. And so you're basically spending money on people that we're going to convert anyways.
So everybody's got this invalid traffic. Well, and every dollar you save on invalid traffic, you can apply to it becomes a dollar that you can apply to something that's generating revenue for you. Here's one for you, John. Do you think 2025 is going to finally be the year where marketers tackle this personalization experience?
Yeah, it's been the year of personalization now for a number of years. It's probably even going back maybe 10 or even 20. But if you go back to basics, you know, personalization, like most of marketing, I think kind of, you know, goes back to people, processes, and technology. You know, you got to coordinate the creative people, the production people, the data people, and then you got to find the right balance, right? We've talked about this in our webinar. What are the reusable templates or what are the repeatable processes you could do to build and improve assets across channels, you know, at scale? So I think, you know, as we look at it in 2025, the area I think is tech where we're going to see the most progress made around multi-channel personalization, because you're really starting to see the ad tech and the MarTech stacks coming together, or at least playing well together. So if you look at this, right, data kind of is getting more centralized and accessible in the cloud, right, with Snowflake and Databricks and others. And then the ability to use that data and build audiences and segments is getting better, both with customer data platforms or customer engagement platforms. So I think the exciting thing is once you've kind of centralized your data and audiences, you can then activate them or communicate with them across paid known media or whatever you want to say, direct marketing and advertising, right? So if we think about it, there's direct marketing, you know, email, SMS, and direct mail. There's paid media, which is the, you know, mobile, social, CTV, and all those things. And then finally, retail media. And I think the exciting thing for personalization is that once you've kind of made your mark tech and ad tech share the common data and audiences, most importantly, you then can better control who sees what on what channel at the what time. And so I think that's the big story for 2025, is all that kind of coming back together here.
That's great. All right. Last question for you that comes to my mind, John, unless you have other things to add. Let's talk about targeting and retargeting. How are you seeing targeting and retargeting evolving? In fact, I think at once you said to me that brands don't really always fully know who they are retargeting. So tell me more about retargeting and how you see that, what that means for brands in 25.
Yeah, sure. So I think since we're both musicians, I'll start off with an analogy. You know, the way I read it is basically for most companies or marketers, right? Retargeting today is a lot like listening to elementary school orchestras. You got kids in different sections playing instruments at different times, in some cases, even different songs at the same times. And that's basically what I think is going on. There's a lot of marketers that have this going on. They got email, cart abandons, and other triggers firing. You got cookie-based retargeting like Criteo. You got site remarketing on Meta and Google. And then you got programmatic print, you know, which we refer to as pixel to postcard. So you need a conductor. And I don't think a lot of marketers have a conductor. And there's a lot of ways to kind of skin that cat, right? You can start with a customer data platform or work your way out. But you need to measure things. So you need to have known audiences. And you need to know, you know, what's there. So all the pieces are basically there, right? You can rank the audiences that are coming in from different sources. You can track spend, or at least by person or device. And then you can make kind of the right business decision when it comes to, like, as we talked about before, next best dollar or next best action. So I think all the pieces are in there. 2025 is the opportunity to get a conductor around these remarketing orchestras.
So if you, if somebody's listening to us today and, they're smarting from your comment about the orchestra, which is a fantastic analogy. What's the first step for them to take to try to pull it all together better?
Yeah, I think it goes back to known audiences. You have to start with a database and a way to organize it, whether it's a customer data platform or a customer engagement platform. And you have to be able to have a way to uniquely identify and organize your customers and prospects. And then you have to recognize your anonymous people coming to your site. And, we talked a lot about third-party cookies, but you can use first-party pixels or code to, start to get more intelligence around who's coming to your site. A lot of people spend a lot of money, but they really don't look at the audiences across the different paths that are coming to them. Kind of the Google search paths that come in, the email paths. We know that catalogs and direct mail drive a ton of traffic. People look at these through analytics tools like Google or Adobe or so forth, but they're really not coherently bringing them together, assessing them, looking at the lifetime value, looking at CAC, and really deciding which of these, which sections play at which times to make a nice, piece of music.
We're coming to the end, John. It's been a great year. Any other thoughts you have about 2025 and what to expect, or maybe said a different way, 2024 and something that happened this year that you didn't expect?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess if I look at our lives within Quad, I think in the media space, we should have seen it coming. But I think the 2024 might be the kind of the end of the holding company per se, and I think you have a lot of models. You've already seen alternative models that are more tech forward, consultancies and different people kind of challenging that, and many many upstarts and point solutions. So I think the traditional agency model where you're arbitraging hours or principal based buying, I think is come to an end or is coming to an end. And obviously it'll have a long tail because it'll be certain things. I think it'll have impacts on how people either insource or outsource and collaborate to get what they need to get done on the marketing side.
I like that observation, and I would agree with you that it's happened at a more rapid pace than I originally anticipated. I've read a few articles this year about how more and more brands are looking at project-based quoting for programs rather than the old conventional full-fledged media AOR.
Well, you and I have seen this hand on. It's a lot of times if I'm a marketer and I'm sending out direct mail or email or a catalog, I want to amplify that with digital. But I don't want to have to spend a massive RFP and sign up an AOR. I just want to be able to solve that particular problem. And there's ways to do that. And usually people's retained agencies aren't tooled up to do that. So it's I think there's got to be more flexible and different types of models to be able to bring the different channels together. And what got us here is not going to get us there, as they say.
Well, if there's one thing about our job that keeps both of us young, it is this constant state of change within it.
Well said.
John, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for doing this again. I just love spending time with you. And I just am so excited about continuing to watch this industry change in 2025.
Thanks again. I appreciate being included for a second time.
Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us on Directly Speaking. We hope your year is off to a great start. And we hope to have you with us again for the next episode. Until then, have a great day, everybody.